Good evening. This is Rabbi Mayevsky. Tonight's shiur is wishing a refuah shleima, Rav Reuven Meir ben Rachel Miriam. We wish him a speedy recovery, as with all the other Chole Yisrael. The parsha today always pained me because of what was going on, and I entitled the shiur "Building Confidence." And what I mean by that is very interesting, I think, in the fact that if we look back to last week's parsha and we think about how the parsha ended, we know that, as we mentioned last week in discussing the growth of Yosef from an oblivious to what his surroundings were, to finally at the end of the parsha, when he interprets the dreams of the Sarah Ofer and the Sarah Mashke, it says, Vahi Baboker, Vayar, you know, he sees them, Vihinom Zoafim, and he sees their pained look on their faces, and he asks them if he could help them. He's been languishing in jail for 10 years, and he feels the pain for somebody else. He has matured at this point in time to realize there are other people. He becomes less self-centered, and you might think that he should be at this point concerned with his own welfare. He's been framed. He's been sold down the river by his brothers, and he's been framed. And this is a terrible situation that he's languishing here. And now he has an opportunity here. He sees these two people, pained look on their faces, and he asks them if he could help them. And this is the growth process that Yosef is going through at this point in time. But we might wonder, when the parasha starts this week, the first question I have asking myself when I Mava Sedra is that when Yosef is taken out of prison and he's brought Vayigalach, Vayichalev Simloso, Vayavoel Paro, and they clean him up and they dress him up in his tuxedo and they bring him before the king, and Pharaoh says to him, I hear that you're the person, I have dreams, and you're the person who can interpret it. When Paro immediately tells him the dreams, what gives Yosef the confidence that he could even be able to interpret the dream? His life might be on the line over here. And what made him think that he could actually do it? And we wonder why he had to languish in jail so much for such a long period of time. But the truth of the matter is, the fact that he was able to interpret the Sarah Ofer and the Sarah Mashke, at the time that he interprets the dream, he is unaware for sure, he does not know, if what he says will come true. He's hoping. And at this point in time, he realizes possibly he's had some Ruach HaKodesh. I would imagine that none of us knows exactly how that would feel. But the point is, I think until it actually happens, you're not aware of how it operates. And now he has these dreams, the Sarah Ofer, he interprets their dreams, and lo and behold, they come true. And as we know, his interpretation of the dream goes against the grain, because obviously it should have been the Sar HaMashke who was put to death, because his sin on the surface would seem a lot more grievous than the Sarah Ofer, because how could the Sarah Ofer rip apart every loaf of bread to see if there's a foreign object in it, and a fly in the wine, all it takes is the naked eye just to look at it and see. And the parasha ends with Paro giving a test to the wine steward and the baker, and the baker goes ahead and just lets his minions deliver the bread, serve the king, whereas he goes ahead after 3 days, and at the party of Paro's birthday, or Paro having a child perhaps that his wife gave birth, we're not sure, but nevertheless, he goes ahead, and at this point in time, he decides to serve the wine to the king, and the king sees that the wine steward learned his lesson, that the king deserves personal attention, which is now what Yosef interpreted to mean, that this is what he sees, and therefore his dream comes true, obviously with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes. But that is the greatest confidence builder possible, when you know you've done that. And what does Yosef realize at this time? It's not only that he was lucky enough and had the God's intervention here to give the proper interpretation of the dream, but there is nothing better then knowing that God has intervened on your behalf, that God is on your side, after, especially after languishing so long in jail, and now know that God is taking part in guiding your life from here on out. And now we come to the situation where the Tsara Mashka goes ahead and tells Paro, if the Paro has no one that he's giving him an interpretation that he thinks is correct, and he says, Nar Eved Ivri, don't think that he has anything. He's a young boy. He's not grown up to know the ways of Egypt, and he's an Eved, he's a slave, so he hasn't been around the palace. He doesn't know how things work in the palace, and he is an Ivri. He doesn't know, you can't say he's an Egyptian because he doesn't know the ways of Egypt. He is totally clueless to what goes on. So anything he tells you is the interpretation that he gave for the Tsara Mashka and the Tsara Ofer went so against the grain that it was a very improbable prediction, and yet it came true, and he's presenting it to Paro this way, and now Paro tells Yosef his dreams. And due to that, Yosef immediately, believe it or not, he is so full of confidence that he knows that within a split second, he immediately answers Paro and starts to say, Chalom Paro Echad Hu. As we know, other interpretations were that the Chartumim that gave Paro their interpretations gave it to him as two different dreams. But Yosef was able to see the connection through the help of God that, of course, the seven skinny cows eating up the seven fat cows would remain skinny. Why? Because the fact remains, that what do they eat? They're herbivores, cows. And if they were eating the Sheva Shibolim, the Shtufos Kodim, the ones that were very, very thick wheat, so to speak, diseased wheat, very thin wheat, as opposed to the healthy wheat, and that the seven, it was all involved in the same thing. And of course, the ramifications were in the dream all about the food in Egypt, which tells him another thing. And he knows that looking back, he begins to put two and two together and does something that's really out of character for somebody who's standing and should be shaking and quaking. You know, you don't speak before you're asked. And Joseph was asked to interpret the dreams, which he does right away. But without soliciting any further information, Yosef begins to wax poetic and tell him, V'ato yereh Paro. And he says, Paro, look, now this is what you're going to have to do. And he gives him advice how to deal with it. One should think that the king should make his own decision and would say, I didn't ask you for any advice. But now he goes ahead, and Yosef goes ahead and tells him all his advice. And Yosef knows now at this point in time, especially when the dream is, Paro accepts it and appoints him to be a viceroy, the confidence has come full circle. And now he knows everything that has happened up to this point in time has been for a purpose, and therefore he has a tremendous amount of confidence. And God needed him to do this. Had he not been in prison beforehand, and had he not had the opportunity to interpret the dream of the Tsara Mashka and Tsara Ofer and watch it come to fruition, he would not have had this confidence to be able to spew forth so rapidly Paro, an answer to Paro at this point in time. It's a wonderful thing, and that's what we say, Vani b'chazecha b'tachti yogeli bi b'shua secha. It should say in the Pasuk, b'shua si, in my salvation, but the fact remains at this juncture, the Pasuk says, b'shua secha. It's a wonderful thing to know that God is actually on your side. God is taking an interest in what you do, and God is guiding you along here. And he knows that everything that you will now do, God has a direct hand in doing it. The problem is that sometimes it goes too far when we think we have gone too far. And we know that when the brothers come down, eventually when a year or two passes and is after the 7 years of plenty come along and everybody is putting away their surplus wheat that's being collected, but the reality is that they're not really collecting it, as we see that as soon as the second year comes along, in the second year of the famine, there is already a tremendous famine in Egypt that people are coming to Mitzrayim for wheat, for all the Mitzrayim are suffering terribly. They no longer have. So what happened to all the surplus? But the fact is, they were gouging. They were selling it to merchants who didn't want to go all the way down to Memphis, where the capital was in Egypt, and go before Pharaoh and have to beg for food. They would be buying it from local merchants. They didn't put away for a rainy day. But that's a subdivision of the whole story. But nevertheless, eventually the brothers have to come down. And by the way, when it says, Vayerdu Achei Yosef Asara Lishbar Bar, and they came down, this was the first time that they gathered together as a group. They had been separated since they sold Yosef. They all, so to speak, as I maybe mentioned last week, they got out of town, they separated, so as not to give away. They might be talking quietly amongst each other and it might be overheard by somebody, possibly Binyamin, or we don't know if Binyamin knew or what he knew and when he knew, because he wasn't there at the sale. So it could be he would have said something. All the brothers were sworn to secrecy, obviously, that nobody told. But nevertheless, at this point in time, Yosef says, Vayizkores HaChalomos, when they came down and bowed down, he remembered his dreams. And now Yosef is seeing, as I said, things have started to come all the way around. As we always like to say, what goes around comes around. And he now sees that his dream, his first dream, is coming true. But the reality is he sees that not both dreams have come true yet, because all the brothers, only 10 brothers, and it was Achara Sor Kochavim, and yet the Shemesh VeYoreach, the significance of that would be his father and his mother. Of course, his mother had died, but the reference is to Bilhar. It doesn't really matter, but nevertheless, Yosef sets out at this point in time, this is where he goes wrong, to set out and make his other dream come true. And Chazal criticized him, and of course, at the end of the day, we know that by the time Vayigash rolls around and Yehuda is begging to let Binyamin go free, Yosef lets him say five times and interpret it five times, and we are told that Yosef lost 10 years of his life for this indignity that he let his father twist in the wind. And the Gemara gets into, and Gemara Brachas talks about what right did he have to do it. And just so this is what it is. He's thinking that perhaps since God is, he has this confidence that has built up in him, that he now has the right to force these dreams to come true if everything was through the hand of God. But now doesn't he realize that his father is suffering with the loss of Binyamin, and certainly when he took away Shimon, and now he's trying to get everybody down there by forcing them to bring Binyamin. This causes a lot of grief. And what will his father think if Binyamin doesn't come home, if Shimon is not here? There's Binyamin Tikachu, Ruvein Einenu, Shimon Einenu, Yosef Einenu, Shimon Einenu. Yes, Binyamin Tikachu. Doesn't he realize that his father is being tortured by all of this pain? And the Gemara berates Yosef for all of these things that he did. But that's because he felt that since God is doing this for him. But what would cause Yosef to do that? What would cause him to make him do all of these things, even in the face of his father? But I think, just to put a little bit of a different spin on it, what the thought occurred to me was that Yosef knows that they're going in. He understands, he sees the future in terms of that this is, as they all would know, that this was the beginning of the Golus. If he would get them all down here now, the 400 years of Golus that was forecast would be, the Bris Bein Absurim would be now taking fruition at this point in time, and they have to be prepared for Golus. Now, Yosef had his faith in God because he had this confidence that had been instilled in him and ingrained now from Yaakov, from the time he was born, and by all his dreams coming true. But what he was concerned about, because since his brothers had taken a turn to the wrong way and sold him, and even when he took away Shimon, they didn't react and they went home without Shimon, without doing anything. He knows that this is a rough situation here to let them begin the Golus in this kind of a manner. And he wants them to come down and forcing the second dream because he wants them, same way it says, Vayizkores HaChalomos, he's waiting for the brothers to see the end result when it finally he appears and makes himself known to his brothers. He wants his brothers to understand that God is controlling all the events and that they're bowing down to him as his dreams were. So he wants the brothers to see that God has made his dreams come true. He knows it, but he wants the brothers to see it. And that is what he's concerned about, not so much that for his own sake, but he knows for the future to make it their sake, to make the, because God, he sees the hand of God. What the interesting thing is here is that this is the major connection to the Yontif of Hanukkah, which we are celebrating now. We know that the Hashmonaim got together and they were very upset with the events of the time, with the Greeks, the Yavanim, that they were making, they were torturing these Jews, trying to make them convert. But the reality is they held fast. But the Jews itself, when we learn our history, is the war went on for approximately 40 years before things had been settled for a while. And the main difference in the Jewish population, because as we know, more Jews were killed by other Jews in these time periods, because the main source of fighting was among the from Jews and the non-from Jews. In other words, we call them the Misyavnim, the people who wanted to accept the Greek culture. And the Hashmonaim, with their success, the Gemara criticizes them. That's why the Gemara talks very little about the miracle of Hanukkah, because it's a punishment for the Hashmonaim because they held fast to the Melucha. They stayed in power for way too many years before they were forced out of power by the Roman government in the end, obviously. But nevertheless, they went ahead and they kept on in the kingship without turning it over to Shevet Yehuda as they were supposed to do, and they were criticized greatly for that. But the fact remains that there was reasons behind it. Since there was this infighting between the from Jews, so to speak, and the Misyavnim, the non-from Jews, the ones who didn't adhere to the Taryag Mitzvot and wanted to accept the Greek culture, at least to some degree, to blend in. But in general, they felt that it was a very slippery slope, that since God had intervened and they understood that the fact that they were Barabim Miad Ma'atim, that they were able, that God gave them a menorah that lit for 8 days, a little bit of oil that stayed lit for 8 days, which obviously was a supernatural miracle. And even though they were great generals and had this guerrilla warfare at the time, the hit and run that they wore down the Greeks at that point in time, but the fact remains that they realized these were all from the hand of God because there were so few, relatively speaking, compared to the Greek army, which was battle-tested for years, and they were able to overcome the army, not just for a few battles, but year after year, the land of Israel kept expanding and expanding almost to the point where it was in the time of David HaMelech, believe it or not. If you look at the graphics of the geography of the day, and they thought that this was the hand of God. But we always have to temper it with understanding there are limits, that we have to know that if there's a Torah, that a pasuk that says, Lo yosur shevet mihuda, they overstepped their bounds. And that's the criticism. They didn't believe that if they let go and made peace with their counterparts, the Misyavnim, and made some sort of allowances and make shalom between everybody in the Jewish amongst the Jewish people, that they didn't trust them, that the Yiddishkeit would falter, and that obviously if God had been on their side for so many years, they were doing the right thing. The same way that Yosef assumed that if God had a hand in everything that he was doing, that he was doing the right thing by making his father twist in the wind for those years, for attempting to make all the dreams come true. While all those things are accountable and we understand why they were doing it, we always have to look around and see before God intervenes in our lives, we have to make sure that we're doing what God wants us to do. And that's a very difficult line to cross. That's a very difficult decision, something to define and understand. May we all have the ability to know when we take a look around and see the hand of God, what does that hand want us to do? Sometimes it seems clear and sometimes it's a little cloudy. May the light of the Hanukkah Lech light our eyes to see what the hand of God wants us to do. Thank you and have a good Shabbos and a good Yontif. Thank you very much.